This is KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, and nothing is more deserving of your financial support than a station doing this kind of important historic work. I'm Richard Wolf, and I'm glad to be here.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, and I am with Pat Schlarbaum, also your host for today.
Thank you for joining us and listening in.
Yes, and it's good to have you with us. Yeah. Later in the show, Kay Puttock will also join us with some reflections about this political election in the wake of last night's Super Tuesday. She is going to bring us an interview with Barry Lynn, Executive Director of the organization Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And we'll have a brief visit from Ames opera lover Bernard White. He'll be here to tell us about Aria in Ames, a musical event featuring the opera Iowa Singers on Sunday, this coming Sunday. So if you like opera or are just curious about it or want to introduce somebody to opera, stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, Pat, start us off with the weather.
And March is coming in like a lion. We have snow predicted again for tonight, less than half an inch is expected, and temperatures will go into the 20s. Temperatures will stay fairly low for the rest of the week. The high for Thursday is predicted to be near 38. The weekend should be sunny, though, and with steadily rising temperatures, Sunday should be back in the upper 50s, and then temperatures are expected to climb back up in the 60s next week. So next week we can go back to the springtime thing.
That's going to be really nice. That's what we're into now. Pat, do you have an update about the Decorah Eagles? I know that they adopted the nest was given to them by the human race.
Their nest tree came down July 20th, and we refurbished it and gave them a starter nest, and they adopted it in October. And last week she laid her third egg. Now, this is 27 eggs in 9 years, which is statistically unheard of. Generally, it's like one or two eggs, but she's really been quite a provider.
And so that would constitute a show of enthusiasm for the nest.
Things are working. Nature's happening. And other things, you know, great horned owls are hatching now. Doug Haar reported a killdeer that had showed up to some of the wetlands here when it was 60 degrees. We've got sandhill cranes returning. We've got some of the trumpeter swans are starting to come back into the open wetlands. So spring is springing.
Awesome. And speaking of spring, if you are in Story County, you can start looking at the plants that will be sprouting along the roadside. They are worth taking note of.
Ursula, we've got over 4,750 acres of roadside in Story County. Roadside prairie plantings were started in a program initiated in Story County in 1987, and the program is still growing today. Joe Koiker is the roadside biologist for the county, and I sat down with him recently to talk about the Roadside Prairie Planting Program.
Joe, how about letting us know your name, where we're located, and what your function and role is with Story County?
Sure. Joe Koiker, actually pronounced Koiker, means keeper of the ducks or duck herder. Transplant from Holland, Michigan to Cedar Rapids and then Osceola. Graduated from Iowa State and started working with the Roadside Program here in Story County after... traveling with the DNR in a few of the wildlife areas back in the 80s. I started in the late 80s in 89 here at Story County Conservation as just a summer kid, and worked up the ranks and became the roadside biologist. I think the title's changed a few times now from vegetation biologist to natural resource biologist for Story County.
Oh, I like that, natural resource, because these roadsides, your focus is prairie.
It is. And if you think about all the acres that Story County manages, I didn't do the math before, you know, this segment, but about 5 acres per mile of road is what we manage, 5 acres from the shoulder to the fence. So every road has about 5 acres of vegetation. And in Story County, we have about 950 miles. So do the math, or at whatever that is. So.
Well, and we're looking at a management scheme that shifted in the 80s. Previously, there was a lot of mowing and a lot of spraying.
Yeah, it was the mowed up nice look. You know, everything needed to be mowed up nice. There was a lot of blanket spraying going on. They'd hire big chemical companies with boom trucks to go out, and there's a lot of collateral damage with that. So grapes, not that we had a lot of grapes back then, but there were certainly a lot of gardens, a lot more farmsteads back in the day. So what happened was Blackhawk County and Story County were the initial counties that, you know, started taking a look at this. We had a great support mechanism with the Iowa Prairie Network. And the Board of Supervisors back in the day and the conservation boards got together in February of 1987 and said, hey, we're going to take the money that we normally pay the weed commissioner and some weed control. We're going to put it to this thing called integrated roadside vegetation management.
Yeah.
We're going to try to reduce some of the herbicide and promote native plants in the roadside that do a lot of things.
Rather than fighting nature, you were going to stabilize and work with nature.
Yeah.
And that prairie resource, our heritage.
Yeah, they couldn't keep up. The mowing wasn't, you know, they couldn't keep up. So we're going to try a new approach. So that was in 87. And I came along in about 89. And, you know, we started, we built a burn rig out of a pickup using a water tank and electric motor, you know, an old horse trough, a horse tank, watering tank. And we've upgraded since then to some professional firefighting rigs. That's just one example. And we go out with backpacks back in the day and control noxious weeds, which is one of the things that is a base of any roadside program, is to conform to the Iowa Weed Law 317 in Iowa Code. So we need to be conscious of some of the weed problems out there.
What are some of those noxious weeds?
Well, Canada thistle used to be public enemy number one, but with Roundup Ready, and we don't have a lot of pastures here in Story County. We're mainly tillable ground, a lot of row crop, unlike a lot of southern Iowa counties that have pastures. So Canada thistle, but we're coming across some other plants coming in. One of them is poison hemlock.
When you mentioned the Roundup Ready, that's the GMO crops that are designed.
The Roundup Ready is taking the weed pressure out of our row crops. I mean, they apply the, I don't know if it's Roundup, it's I guess I can say it's glyphosate or some other kind of HMO. But so we don't really have the pressure that we used to with landowners calling in saying, hey, spray this spot on 270th Street. We're pretty much on the down low with that, where there's some other problems coming in, like poison hemlock, which killed Socrates, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these problems, you know, and then we have the rural urban interface, so you have a lot more houses coming out into the country, and these people with the wild parsnip, and that, you know, we know that plant can cause blisters, and it's worse than poison ivy, actually. So some wild parsnip, poison hemlock, things like that, and in some of the parts of the county where we do have livestock and some pastures, there are some plants like musk thistle that we need to be aware of. And part of the job of this roadside manager gig is I'm the weed commissioner. So every January, you know, they crown me with the weed commissioner rules, take the complaints from landowners that are having trouble with each other. Lately, most of this has been in town, like Ames or...
Well, humans will have conflicts.
Right, they do.
But your standards are to stabilize those areas, address the noxious weeds, and hopefully get something established that will persevere the ages.
Yeah, we're talking weed control here, but the big part of our duties are following around the road crews after they do a road regrade or a new bridge. For instance, at McFarland Park, we have a new bridge across the Skunk River. We'll do silt fence, and we have hydro seeders that put mulch down. If you see that blue stuff we spray all over, that's recycled wood and water that we pump out of the river. And a lot of that seed, Pat, we harvest in-house with our old combines. We have those Alice Chalmers Model 72s, pull-behind combines.
Sure.
And so we're trying to be self-sufficient as much as possible. So a big part of our job is to plant back where there is bare soil, or the road department has done some construction, especially through the floods and the high water events. There's a lot of things that need to be replanted. We average about 50 acres a year. I just looked at the numbers last week. We're well over about 1,200 acres in Story County, roadside acres of being planted back to prairie.
That's astounding, and we really want to express our appreciation to you for that effort. So in the 80s, this program had started, and it's gone through its ebbs and flows and growing pains and however. Areas that you have established, tell us about some of those.
Well, we learn as we go. Initially, it was tough to find prairie seed, and there weren't a lot of growers out there, so we started growing our own. We have several nurseries that we use, and we also have some private people that have nurseries that allow us to combine. But
yeah, Cindy Hildebrand has been real instrumental with that program.
Yeah, she's been great.
So we call it Local Ecotype.
Local Ecotype, and there's also a program out there called Yellow Tag Seed, which was started by Daryl Smith up at UNI at the Tallgrass Prairie Center. We harvested local seed from prairie remnants, and then they grew that in a greenhouse and gave that to the seed growers. So now we can get local ecotype seed pretty much at any dealer around. And we started the first roadsides that I planted. Many people might know what we call Riverside Road, as it goes past Martin Marietta, North Ames, kind of tees into Ada Hayden as you go across the river.
Between 69 and Dayton Road.
Correct. That was done in 1990, and you can just kind of see what 20-some years it looks. There's some species in there that are gone. You know, we learned a lot about what to do, where to tune our seed mixes. But the main thing I want to mention is we learned that you really have to be aware of what you plant, because we have Maximilian Sunflower, and that was a plant that we bought from Nebraska, and it's a Nebraska variety. And the stems are as big as your thumb. I mean, it's like a tree stand out there, and it's a pretty sight in September, but it's the Maximilian Sunflower is pretty much a monoculture. So there's beauty there. It's doing what we want. It's stabilizing the soil. It's providing habitat.
Doesn't require spray or heavy maintenance.
A little bit of tree, we need to burn it every now and then to keep the trees out of there and the shrubs. It may, cause some motorist problems around the intersections. But, it really is takes care of itself.
Boy, and the compass plants.
they're in there too, yep.
Are just fantastic. Is there a certain stretch of road that you'd like to share with the listeners that really means a lot to you?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of roads out there that look great. Some are on gravel. Some are on the hard surface roads. And we went back and looked. There was a study from, the Tallgrass Prairie Center on how some of the different counties do their seeding. You know, we could talk about seeding forever and different ways to put seed down. Hydromulcher, fall, spring, broadcast, drill. And one planting that turned out spectacular is a stretch on the county road S-14 south of Highway 210 as you go in. That road goes into the Chautauqua Wildlife Area.
Oh, the Chautauqua Wildlife Area of northeastern Polk County.
Correct. That road runs south of Nevada, but it's south of 210, 1 mile. It's a 1 mile stretch, and it has every plant that we planted, every seed, every variety came up. There's about 65 different species that came up. Everything just worked right. And I'll tell you, we did it in July, when they say really in some of the books, they don't plant in July. We kind of,
It's dry?
It's dry. Yeah, the seeds have a hard time making it. It doesn't make them very happy not to have a lot of moisture. But we did it anyway. We needed to get something down, and it just turned out great.
That's special information to share with the listeners.
Yeah. So it's really neat to see. And, I mentioned earlier to you while we were talking that everywhere I go, it seems, I'm taking the gravel, even if it's Highway 30, because I'm always looking at plants, and I'll even pull over at intersections and take a picture of tall bone set when it's blooming or compass plant. And, if we go on vacation, they have to put blinders on, because like when we go across the interstate into Illinois and all the teasel we were talking about,
noxious weeds. Oh, that'd be another noxious weed.
Yeah, teasel, which, by the way, I did see on a calendar of a bird magazine, at, you know, teasel as a dry flower arrangement took off for noxious weeds back in the day. But so, you know, I think Iowa's roadsides in general, there's about 47 counties that have a roadside program.
47 of the 99 counties, yep, are looking at this sort of sustainable or stabilizing roadsides as opposed to constant mowing, spraying, and
other counties are getting there too. They see the benefit of a roadside program and the savings, and you know, instead of just hiring a spray.
Our retired Story County Conservation Board Director Steve Lackwell got this thing started. He was very visionary. And early on, he had appreciation of prairie and made it work. And
sure. Yeah, this would have never and still would not exist if it wasn't for the support of the public and the Board of Supervisors. They get a lot of calls about, you know, some of the neat things happening. And also, I need to say that the Story County engineer and the engineering staff support this too, because they're the ones that have to maintain the road. They get, you know, they're the ones that... the roadsides and get the calls from the public if something's wrong or not what they want. So the support of the engineering staff is really makes this program click.
Is there anything else, Joe, you'd like to share? New responsibility.
2 years ago, well, Iowa has divided up in drainage districts, the whole state. There's not a lot south.
So beyond roadsides,
of the Des Moines,
we're talking the watershed here,
right,
the drainage
right
districts.
Okay. I assume back in the 20s and 30s when the steam shovels and the backhoes and they wanted to get a little more farming going.
Yeah, when they were chewing those channels.
Right.
They all,
so they divided up the landform, and there's, we have a map. Every county has a map, especially north, you know, in the Des Moines lobe, where it's a little flatter.
Northwest Iowa.
Right. Mm-hmm. We have these drainage districts. In Story County, we really haven't done a lot ever since they've been built. Some haven't never been touched. And you'll drive along, you'll see a nice wooded corridor and an open ditch. Well, as far as a habitat or a natural resource biologist goes, we like some of that cover. We like some of that habitat. But on the other hand, the county board of supervisors acting as the drainage district trustees are under pressure by the landowners farming to say, hey, our water's backing up in our field because of all the trees and brush and root balls in the open ditch. So instead of going and hiring for hundreds and thousands of dollars a contractor to come in and totally reshape and redo and tear out all the trees and
which
shrubs,
has been happening.
Correct. We decided to go in there and do some selective cutting in some of these open ditches that we can manage in-house, Story County Conservation. We'll go in there with a crew and we'll cut out and thin some of the trees out. We'll leave the shrubs as much as we can. And then we promote buffer strips along the side of these open ditches if there aren't already buffer strips.
And that's grassed areas.
Correct. That's a CRP program that's continuous sign up. They're eligible for as long as the ground is being farmed and has a row crop history, a landowner can sign up for these buffer strips. And it can go from anywhere from, I'm not sure, but anywhere from about 33 feet to as far as they want it to go, a buffer strip along these creeks. So you get a mixture of prairie and some prairie forbs and grasses and a few shrubs. We got the perfect habitat for all the flora and fauna here in Iowa.
Well, habitat for wildlife, including butterflies, but also water quality, water filtration system.
It's a win-win. It just provides, you know, a better thing for Story County and for Iowa in general to get these buffers along these creeks and
so
open ditches.
It's probably not a stretch to realize if we didn't have the roadside vegetation specialists, we wouldn't have this opportunity now to grow into the drainage district habitat enhancement.
Right. It's all eyes are on us. We do have to bill some money back every year to keep the program going. Because every time we put our time into these drainage districts, they are billed back to the landowners of that. And so in order for us to keep the program going, we have to pay for our material and some of our labor. So we have a goal to meet, and we're trying to hit that by the end of this fiscal year and keep going with this pilot project. There's not another county doing it that we're aware of. So,
yeah. Well, Well, that's, I'm sure that makes Steve Lequa smile.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to.
It makes all of us smile.
Yeah. It makes me smile. As long as, and we just had someone sign up for buffer strip yesterday, and the more native vegetation we can put on the ground in Iowa and again help the water quality and everything else that goes with it makes us all smile.
Thank you.
You bet.
What's this job mean to you and your family?
Well, I tell you, it's been my life, 24 years. I still enjoy putting my boots on every day. Yeah, it's just been a great run. And hopefully someone will pick up the ball when I'm not around anymore. But, Pat, I'd like to talk one other thing. We used to do the Kestrel box. Remember the Kestrels? They're kind of our mascot, the American Kestrel. And we do have a few boxes out there on our secondary road system. You'll see them and trying to see what's going on with that American Kestrel, the cavity nester that really loves the roadside. You can see that bird, is it kiting?
Flighting? And hovering.
Hovering.
And you know, the Iowa DOT is no longer working with us with the Kestrels. So on these county roads, there's a space for that. Bob Anderson, the Decorah Eagle man, he has Kestrel boxes.
He
refers to his roadways of Winneshiek County as a bowl ways for the meadow bowls. There's kind of a mouse of the prairie and roadsides. That is a real important link to wildlife and the butterflies.
You bet. A lot of projects out there, a lot of research projects in the roadside, especially being so close to Iowa State.
Cool. Thank you for all you do for conservation.
Well, thank
Joe
you.
Quaker.
All right.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio, local talk on 89.1 FM. You just heard Joe Quaker, the roadside biologist for the Story County Conservation Board. And speaking about the roadside prairie planting program that Story County has nurtured for over 20 years.
Pat, what is your favorite roadside plant?
Oh, that's a real good question. There's quite a few, but pale purple coneflowers are still one of my favorites. And anytime you can spot a compass plant, they stand above the other prairie plants and sometimes have a bobolink or a Dick Sissel or one of those meadowlarks. I really like the compass plants and pale purple coneflowers.
So if somebody would want to learn more about what plants to look for and how to identify them, what's a good way to learn about the plants and to do a little bit of research to prepare yourself to go to the roadside?
There you go.
To the corridors.
Dean Russa here in Ames has an excellent prairie book. Also, Carl Kurtz has Prairie Reconstruction, just had his second edition published. So look up Carl Kurtz or Dean Russa. Paul Christensen.
How do you spell Russa?
R-O-O-S-A.
Okay. So Dean Russa or Carl Kurtz.
Kurtz and K-U-R-T-Z for Carl.
And they have good guides to prairie plants.
I think they're about the best. We're fortunate.
Okay. Very nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
All bound to go, I'm gonna leave him running because you're walking way too slow. I'm going back to the border, honey, that's where I'm way better known. You know you haven't done nothing but drive a good boy away from home. I got the key to the highway, built out and bound to go. I'm gonna leave him running, cause you're walking way too slow.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Kay Puttock has joined us now, and thank you for staying with us. We've been talking about the roadside prairie plants, so now let's look for a few minutes at the results of yesterday's Super Tuesdays. On the Republican side, Donald Trump won 285 delegates, and Cruz won 161, Rubio 87, Kasich 25, and Carson 8. And on the Democratic side, we have Hillary Clinton with 1,001 delegates and Sanders 371. As far as states go, on the Republican side, Donald Trump took Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Massachusetts, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Ted Cruz took Alaska, Oklahoma, and Texas, predictably. And Marco Rubio took Minnesota. On the Democratic side, Hillary took Alaska, Arkansas, Georgia, Massachusetts, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia. And Bernie Sanders took Colorado, Minnesota, Oklahoma, and, of course, Vermont.
It was close in Massachusetts for those two.
It was close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, we learned something interesting in this process. Community radio relies on free sources of audio. We don't have a crew that can go to press conferences. We don't have that kind of budget. So one of the interesting things we discovered was that it is not possible to get a copy of Trump's speech from his press conference free. So that's kind of interesting. All the free sources have been blocked online. However, yeah. We do have a Kay, can you give a quote since we
Well, it was quite obvious. We do have a clip, as Ursula was implying there, from Clinton, but not from Trump. But both Clinton and Trump are now going after one another. And Trump made that quite explicit. He said, I'll be going after nobody but Hillary Clinton. And she had quoted him, referred to him, saying, America has always been great, but we are going to make America whole. And he just started mocking that. He said, she says she's going to make America whole. I don't know what that means.
Okay, and we do have a brief clip from Hillary since that is available for free, so let's hear that.
What a super Tuesday! You know, all across our country today, Democrats voted to break down barriers so we can all rise together. And I am so delighted to be here with you in Florida. I congratulate Senator Sanders on his strong showing and campaigning, and I'm grateful to all of you who voted for me, to the volunteers and organizers. I know you've worked your hearts out, and to all my friends.
Yeah, and although last night's results do not specifically point to religion as a deciding factor, especially the Republican candidates and even Hillary Clinton have talked more about religion than they often do. Yesterday, I spoke with Barry Lynn, who's the executive director of the organization Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And he pointed out that religion has played an important role in this election cycle, greater, he said, than any other election he's witnessed in his lifetime.
As was witnessed in the Republican caucus in Iowa.
Yes, yes. And even Trump plays lip service to this, although, as both Lynn and I were pointing out, not in a very sincere way. But so let's hear about this, about the role of religion in this campaign and as it was showing up yesterday, too. I'm very glad to welcome you. You were recently in Ames in January to talk about church-state issues and to debate the question, are religious liberties crumbling? And so I'm so grateful you agreed to talk to us again about First Amendment and church-state issues, especially as it's Super Tuesday. It's very relevant. So thank you again and welcome.
Thank you very much. It's nice to talk with you.
Well, I'd like to make sure our listeners know about your unique qualifications for talking about these issues. You're both a lawyer and a minister.
That's right. I am an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ, as well as a member of the Supreme Court Bar. So I'd like to say that I can forgive you today, but still go on and sue you in the morning. Let's hope that doesn't happen, though.
Well, as I say, today is Super Tuesday, and I think it's at least six of the states today who will vote for the presidential candidate that they would prefer. And in those six states, the evangelical vote will be very important.
Indeed, the evangelical vote is important in not just on Super Tuesday, but also because throughout the year there tends to be a greater turnout of self-described evangelical conservatives than there are of any other category in the American electorate. So this is very important. This whole campaign so far is the most religion-infused that I have seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, three of the presidential candidates, Cruz, Rubio, and Carson, have pledged that if they become president, they would pass what they call a First Amendment Defense Act, FADA, during their 100 days in office. So I'd like to start just by clarifying the issues that are involved here. And would you like to start by talking about the relevant clauses of the First Amendment?
Sure. The First Amendment has two clauses about religious freedom, and they must be read together. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, there were formulations of this that were much clearer. For example, the first Congress that sent this amendment out to the states to be ratified, one formulation said, Congress shall not establish a church. In other words, name a specific denomination as the official religion of the country. But that was rejected because the framers thought it was just much too narrow. So you have this a bit arcane language, no law respecting an establishment of religion. In other words, no law touching upon this issue. They wanted this to be dramatic. They wanted it to be broad. And before your listeners say, but wait a minute, it says Congress, after the 14th Amendment was passed following the Civil War, it was clear that the 14th Amendment was designed in part to apply the Bill of Rights to the states so that states could not pass laws respecting an establishment of religion either.
Now, you say this is the most religion-infused campaign you've ever seen. Do you think there's a particular reason for that at this time?
Well, I think that one party, the Republican Party, certainly understands that its voters at its base are tending to be evangelicals. That's why you see people like Donald Trump, who, to my knowledge, had never expressed any religious interest before this campaign, now finding what he referred to as the family Bible, quoting from the Bible, albeit in a peculiar way. When he was at Liberty University to give a speech about
right.
a month ago, he announced that he was particularly happy with 2 Corinthians instead of what most Bible literate people would say, 2 Corinthians.
Right.
2 Corinthians sounds a little bit like a joke that starts 2 Corinthians and an Ephesian walk into a bar. As far as the other candidates, I mean, they do have much more of a record on this. Certainly Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, who just left the race, Ted Cruz are in their heart and soul evangelical Christians, and they have made that very clear during their entire elected life.
But even Rubio, for example, when he was here in Ames for the family leader, yeah, he quoted the Bible. He opened the whole Bible and he said chapter 12, meaning 12 Luke.
Right.
But, you know, so I wonder that voters don't doubt the sincerity sometimes of these Bible-professing candidates.
Well, I think that's true. I think there is some doubt, but I think that among a part of the electorate, the fact that they know that there is a Bible is enough. For a while, candidates were routinely asked, what's your favorite book?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is where you find the strange confluence that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump said their favorite book was the Bible, we published a little piece here saying, don't ask the question anymore, because who in the world would come up with another book now in this infusion of religion campaign, no one's going to say, I really liked Treasure Island or 50 Shades of Grey.
No. I'm a little confused, and I'm sure probably some of our listeners are. There's two clauses here, establishment and freedom.
Yes.
Free exercise of religion and the establishment of religion. And it does seem to me that evangelicals only care about one of those clauses, the free exercise of their own religion.
Well, they do. I think there's a huge percentage of the evangelical Christian community that only cares about free exercise. And moreover, they want to expand that dramatically. Free exercise does mean if you are a person in a prison who needs some kind of an adjustment in your the food that is served to you, or if you want to wear a turban or a beard and it doesn't have any negative effect on anyone else, you should be entitled to do that. And in fact, there is a federal statute that guarantees that. What has happened now, though, is that there's been a dramatic change in the definition of what it is to freely exercise religion, so that just about a year ago, the United States Supreme Court said that even for-profit companies, under many circumstances, have the right to exercise religion. They can practice religion. This is the so-called Hobby Lobby case, the people that make all the pink flamingos and all of that, and that they can exercise religion to the extent that they can deny their women employees coverage in an insurance plan for contraceptives. This is absolutely an extension way beyond anything that the constitutional originalists intended, and way beyond anything that the people who wrote that federal law, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, ever intended.
Yeah, and you could argue, too, that it's prohibiting the free exercise of other people's religion to impose this on them. So there does seem a slight contradiction almost in those two clauses, or there can be if one is overemphasized, if one of the clauses is overemphasized, would you say?
Yeah, I think there is. I think there is a kind of tension, if not a contradiction, if you extend these clauses to mean too much. I mean, there are all kinds of First Amendment purists when it comes to freedom of speech, freedom of the press, people who believe that every form of communication, whether it's a podcast, a radio show, or a nationally televised event, are all entitled to freedom of speech and of the press. But when it comes to freedom of religion, almost everybody draws some line, and unfortunately the line's being drawn in an inappropriate place. And this is what these candidates who now say they support federal legislation mean when they say we need a federal law that will guarantee that people who have a religious objection to any law, whether it's a civil rights law, a state marriage law, do not have to comply with it if they have a religious objection. This is close to, it's kind of an anarchistic view, a view that if you have a religious objection to virtually anything, it will trump the law itself, that you can exempt yourself from laws that apply to everyone else. That can't be what the Constitution was designed to do.
Yeah, so that, for example, people can refuse to make a wedding cake for a gay wedding or refuse to take photographs, those kind of things.
But yeah, and in fact, many of these pieces of legislation at the state and the federal level are so broad that they would even say to a public official, for example,
Kim Davis
down in Kentucky, you don't have to sign a statement as you don't have to sign a marriage license for people you disagree with as a matter of your religion.
But in fact, as that turned out, she did go to prison for a while for refusing to do that, and now she's out. She's allowing her deputies to sign licenses, although she's not doing it.
That's true. She also, though, wants her name removed from the official marriage license itself. The chief clerk in every county is supposed to have a name printed on the certificate. She doesn't like that. And because there was a recent change in the governor's mansion in Kentucky, the new governor has suggested he will make it possible for that name to be removed so that she doesn't ever see it. She did go to jail. I think she was in jail for a day and a half. This does not make her much of a martyr, but to the people who support this view, if I believe it as a matter of at least my Christian religion, I don't have to do it. She has become a martyr. I understand she's writing a book. To me, she is not Joan of Arc. She is not Dred Scott. She is not Rosa Parks. She is just a woman who was elected to do a job who now refuses to do it. That is not heroism.
Mm-hmm. As a minister, can you at all understand the evangelical point of view? Can you understand where they're coming from? What they're afraid of, or what on earth is going on? Trump, who's, as I said, we doubt his sincerities, but he said things at Liberty University, Jerry Falwell's university. He said, Christianity is under siege, and I'm going to protect Christians. We are losing power in American society.
Yeah, well, without even going to the question of the level of his sincerity, if any, I think one of the things that I do think I understand, because I spend so much time debating people in the so-called religious right, I do understand where they're coming from. They really are desperately afraid of losing control. For most of the history of this country, at least since the Civil War, Protestantism in this country, and then later joined by Roman Catholicism, became a de facto national religion.
Mm-hmm.
If you were Jewish, the level of anti-Semitism in the late 40s and 50s was the subject of controversial plays and novels. It was difficult to acknowledge any religion other than Christianity. And I think some of the people today really do forget that and forget that we are in a very different climate now than we were even in the 50s and 60s. In the 1960s, John Kennedy, running for office, had to go to Texas and speak to a group of Baptist ministers because they were concerned that he would take his direction not from the Constitution, but from the Pope in Rome. When he spoke, he said in a speech which is absolutely sends chills up my spine every time I watch it, you can see it on the internet, he said, I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute. There is no candidate today that would be willing to make such a bold statement. But he felt it was necessary. Mitt Romney tried to do something a few years ago to explain that he would not be listening to the Mormon elders but would abide by the Constitution.
Right.
But it was a very flat speech, and I don't think it convinced many people of the sincerity of his belief.
Yes, they say an atheist couldn't possibly run for president of the United States.
Well, the statistics are all that anybody can run. We know that because there are a lot of people that run in these early primaries.
Well, yeah, frankly, couldn't succeed in running.
Yeah, I mean, they just couldn't get elected.
Right.
And I think that's what the public thinks. They still have an enormous hostility to people who do not claim a direct religious affiliation.
Trump has also said, in addition to saying Christians are losing power, which he's showing his usual bluntness there, but he's also made very frightening anti-Muslim statements.
Yes,
wants to exclude Muslims from this country, from entering this country, and labeling and registering those that are already here, which has very unpleasant, evokes very unpleasant memories of Nazism and so on.
Yeah, it is extraordinary to see someone with that kind of an attitude. He's not the only person who was seeking or is still seeking the nomination of the Republican Party who has this anti-Muslim sentiment. However, he is he's a person who expresses it in the boldest and crudest ways. When he's asked to explain these blustery remarks, he usually hesitates or changes it slightly and says, I think in regard to the Muslim ban, he said, well, he might let sports figures in. So, but, you know, this... there are not a lot of sports figures, for example, who are women who are allowed to compete in most of the Middle East nations. So I don't think it's a credit to either his understanding of religion or to his understanding that America has become, to its credits, a remarkably remarkably diverse country, including diversity of religious belief and non-belief in religious matters.
Yes, what this brings to my mind is the famous words, I think it was Pastor Niemöller in Germany.
Yeah.
You probably remember what he said more accurately than I do. Talking about the Nazis, first they came after the Jews, I think it was, and then they, or the communists maybe.
Communists,
then the Jews.
Yeah.
And then the Catholics, and I was not a Jew, I was not a Catholic, so I did nothing. And then they came after me, and then it was too late.
That's right, because there was no one left. And I think that that's really the heart of this matter. If we don't like what somebody in a different religion or someone who does not have a...
This is Local Talk on KHI Community Radio. That was Barry Lynn, Executive Director of the organization Americans United for the Separation of Church and State.
Kay was interviewing Mr. Lynn, and I am also your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Pat Schlarbaum, who's also here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are an opera lover, and if you want to, or if you want to introduce somebody you love to opera, or if you're just curious about opera, there's an event occurring this weekend that would interest you. The Ames chapter of the Des Moines Metro Opera Guild invites you to see rising stars of the Opera Iowa Troupe. Bernard White, or Bernie White?
Yes,
from the Ames chapter is here to explain. Welcome, Bernie.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. So tell us what's going to happen.
Well, this is a wonderful event. It will feature seven young singers. I call them young, but they're all very accomplished. These are singers who, many of them now already have master's degree in vocal performance and things like that. They're part of the Opera Iowa Troupe, and they come every year to help us raise money for the Des Moines Metro Opera. They'll be singing selections from very well-known operas, and they'll be also singing some things from Broadway musicals. I'm sure we'll hear something from Rossini's Cinderella, which is an opera that they're doing this year, the Opera Iowa Troupe is doing this year in the schools and in some of the communities around Iowa. These singers are chosen from many hundred applicants. They have a lot of applicants for this position. The Opera Iowa Troupe comes in January, and they stay until May doing performances around Iowa and actually up into Minnesota. While it's primarily billed as an opera event, it's also a wonderful music event. There'll be some art songs, and there'll be some wonderful selections from Broadway. I would suspect Sweeney Todd or South Pacific or things like that. So it's a wide range of musical events.
Very nice. And where is the event going to be?
Okay, yes. It's at First United Methodist Church, which is right here in the center of Ames, right between the library and the post office.
On with Kellogg.
On Kellogg, with wonderful parking. So it's very accessible. It starts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and there are plenty of seats, so don't worry, and you can get tickets at the door.
And it's a very beautiful venue, too, on top of that. It's one of the most beautiful venues in town.
Yes. All students are encouraged to come, so we hope that some of you students listening will decide Sunday afternoon that you'd like to come and join us. We'd really like to host you there at the event.
Mm-hmm. Will there be a reception afterwards?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. My wife Linda's probably listening, and she'd really get to me if I came home without mentioning it. Yes, so there's a reception afterwards with our sweets and savories. And one of the highlights is that you get to meet the singers and talk to them and find out what's happening in their careers, what their favorite opera is, what they might be doing in the future. And so it's a good chance to meet these young, accomplished artists.
Would you please repeat again where the event is and when?
All right. It is Sunday, March the 6th at 2 p.m., and it's at the First United Methodist Church, and that's at 516 Kellogg here right in the center of Ames.
Tell us just a little bit about the Ames chapter of the Opera Guild. Who are you?
We are a group of about 50 persons. We've been in existence since about 1980. We meet monthly for programs relating to opera. Our function, really, number one, I think, is to educate people about opera, and to we have presenters who will give opera reviews, but we're also a fundraising group for the Des Moines Metro Opera.
Roger Berger is part of your group, right?
Oh, yes.
Our own Roger Berger, host of the opera show here on KHOI?
Absolutely. Roger and Kay are stalwart members of our group. Yes.
So do you guys provide him with his material?
We certainly do. And Roger's always there taking lots of notes during the presentation. I think, oh, we'll hear some of this on KHOI in a few weeks.
That's great. Thank you again for coming and telling us about it. Again, that's going to be on this weekend.
Yes, Sunday.
On Sunday.
2 o'clock.
A presentation called Aria.
Arias in Ames, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be hearing arias.
Yes, yeah, primarily selections from well-known operas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That sounds like a very harmonious way to spend a Sunday afternoon.
Good. Yeah, it's a big weekend for opera in Ames. There's also a presentation on Saturday night from Town and Gown. So if opera fans will get lots of opportunities this weekend.
How long have you been listening to opera?
I thought about that this morning. I think I started listening to opera when I was 15, so that's about 60-some years.
What got you into it?
I'm not sure. My mother was a musician, so I heard classical music, and then I guess on the radio, I heard the Met Opera on the radio, and that's what got me started, listening to the Saturday Met Opera Presents.
All right, all you 15-year-olds, listen up. Roger's opera show is on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Yes, absolutely.
It'll touch your heart.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
So you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, that's me, Pat Schlarbaum, and Kay Puttock. And we spoke with Joe Coaker, who is roadside biologist for Story County Conservation Board, in charge of 4,750 acres and 950 miles of roadside with prairie plants on those. We also spoke with Barry Lynn, executive director of the organization Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And thank you for joining us today, Bernie White, from the Ames chapter of the Des Moines Metro Opera Guild. And Arias in Ames is featuring the Opera Iowa Singers, and it'll be happening on Sunday, March 6th at 2 p.m. in the sanctuary of the United Methodist Church in Ames.
I want to repeat, Ursula, that you can get tickets at the door.
Local Talk was engineered by Richard Morrison. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop, as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook.
You can also listen to this show and all our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. You can find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Please remember that you, as the listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
By the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. That's workinames.com.